Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and Hillary Clinton taught John Kerry how to do it. And now the crime of public corruption goes mainstream. Right? The current Secretary of State, John Kerry, we just found out today, has given $9 million. $9 million tax dollars, State Department funds, to his daughter. That's right, to his own daughter, for a Peace Corps program that she started and she manages. And according to that nonprofit, tax filing indicates that she is the only paid official of the organization. They've given her $9 million, and her salary, according to their own filings, is that she makes $140,000 a year. $140,000 a year. And by the way, that's for 30 hours a week. Hey, that's pretty good. It's good work if you can get it, right? No competition. The contract that John Kerry worked through the U.S. Senate and through the State Department, no competition. It was not sent out for bids. By the way, it also violates their five-year rule. They have a five-year rule in this kind of situation. The longest you can have a contract in a no-bid contract is 5 years. They violated that. So Hillary has taught everyone, you know, even me for that matter, how to interact with the federal government. Like, for example, you know, what to do if you get subpoenaed. I just wish, oh, how I wish that that would happen to me, that the federal government would subpoena me even now before the election. Wouldn't that be delicious? That would be so awesome. Because I could reply to the court, sorry, I got the subpoena, and so I destroyed the records. I decided that you didn't need to see these records, so I destroyed them. So this is, what would this be in the real world outside of government corruption, right? Which is, that is the main profession of Bill and Hillary Clinton, public corruption. This would be, what would you be charged with? Destruction of evidence, obstruction of justice, defying a subpoena, contempt of court, suborning perjury by instructing your employees to lie about the destruction of evidence, and the defiance of the subpoena. Those are the things you could be charged with. Prosecutors are very good at coming up with charges. And here at Bob and Yurt Live, we know. I mean, I was charged with conspiracy to loiter. Now, I didn't destroy evidence that was subpoenaed by the federal government. I didn't do that. What I did was stand around on a public sidewalk with my friends talking about whether or not we should stand around on the public sidewalk. And this is a matter of court record. I'm not making it up. I was charged, perhaps the only person in the history of the Republic, I was charged with conspiracy to loiter, and I was tried in the Denver City and County building in one of their courtrooms, criminal courtroom, tried for conspiracy to loiter, and I was convicted. And I was sentenced, and I spent, what was it, 6 weeks in jail for conspiracy to loiter. How's that? Whereas Hillary has now taught us that you just do these things boldly. So I should have just gone, I should have gone to the prosecutor and the judge and said, I conspired to loiter. I did it. And there's nothing you could do to me. So it would be so wonderful if I could get subpoenaed by the federal government sometime between now and the election. So I could just explain that we got the subpoena and we realized that you didn't need to see these records, so we destroyed them. It would be just so wonderful. And so Hillary has taught everyone an expanded form of our own BEL observation, something that we've been observing for some time now, about evolutionists and atheists in general. Really, it's what we call our doctrine of popularity for evolutionists, DOPE, our doctrine of popularity for evolutionists. And it's our observation, which until now we've typically applied just to atheist and evolutionist. It's this, that the evolutionist who becomes the most popular is the one who says the most absurd things with the straightest face. And that is incontrovertible. And it's the Bob and Yurt Live doctrine of popularity for evolutionists. the most popular evolutionist is the one who says the most absurd thing with the straightest face. In fact, let me ask my producer, could you grab our newest Dawkins YouTube video? We haven't even published this yet on our channel. It's less than 2 minutes, and we're using this to demonstrate our doctrine of popularity for evolutionists, that the most popular evolutionist is the one who says the most absurd things with the straightest face. In that case, you'll hear it. We'll get to it in a moment or two. It is Richard Dawkins explaining that the universe came from nothing, and he's trying to explain what nothing is. And nothing is this quantum field with, you know, all this garbage. And it's so absurd, the audience just breaks out laughing because he's trying to define nothing and make it something, and he's pretending that he's talking about nothing. Because they want to say where the universe came from, and they can't say it was always here. So they want to say the universe came from nothing, but they can't do that because everyone knows that nothing comes from nothing. And so what they do a sleight of hand, and they talk about something, some quantum field, some force of gravity, and they say the universe came from that, and they're pretending that they're talking about nothing. But if you're talking about a quantum field or the law of gravity, those things are not nothing. And so where did they come from? So they didn't answer the question, where did everything come from? They just, if they were right, which they're wrong, but even if they were right, they just punted it. They just pushed it back a level, because then the question is, where did all this quantum mechanics come from? Where did the law of gravity come from? So they don't answer anything, but it's a facade. It's what a magician does. He distracts you. So it's like turtles all the way down, right? What's the earth standing on? It's the back of a tortoise. Well, what's the tortoise standing on? Oh, kid, don't bother yourself with it. It's turtles all the way down. So they say life can't evolve on Earth because, you know, it's too difficult to evolve on Earth. So then where did life come from? Well, it evolved out in space on a planet around some other star. Well, they didn't solve the problem. They just punt it. They just put it somewhere else because it's just as hard for life to evolve around that on that planet as it is to evolve on our planet. It's not hard. It's impossible because the language of life is based on symbolism, and the laws of physics and chemistry have no symbolic logic function, so life can't evolve because life is information-based, and information is symbolic. And so physics and chemistry cannot give rise to symbolism because they have no symbolic logic functions. So anyway, that's too complicated for atheists. But to get back to the point here, the Babinert Live doctrine, the doctrine of popularity for evolutionists, is that if you say the most absurd thing with the straightest face, you'll be the most popular. And so Hillary, she has expanded that generally beyond evolutionists, even beyond atheists, to just socialists, to Democrats, to leftists, to progressives, and even, you could fathom, to Republicans. I mean, just generally. So if you're in rebellion against God, and you have people who like you because of that, like Bill Clinton was a lying fornicator, right? And his popularity levels were very high. That's because he made lying fornicators feel good about themselves. And so Hillary, too, she's documenting our DOPE, the doctrine of popularity for evolutionists, that it applies also to political candidates. Because remember, she stood on the deck of the Intrepid, our warship that's now permanently docked at a pier on Manhattan's west side, with NBC's town hall about national security. And Matt Lauer is interviewing her before Donald Trump came on. And Matt Lauer was eviscerated by the media over the next 48 hours because he pressed Hillary Clinton on her claims about email and how she kept contradicting herself and giving misinformation to the public. So he challenged her for like 6 minutes. And she got really emphatic, really animated. And she said, Matt, you know, the State Department knows, the FBI knows, that classified information comes with a header. It comes with a header. Across the top of the email have a header. And not a single email I sent or received had a header. And what he should have said was, Hillary, we all know that's not true. I mean, he should have said that. Could you imagine if Matt Lauer had said that at that point, after 6 minutes of what the leftist media thinks was harassing her already, and then she gets so emphatic. Could you imagine after she gave that extreme emphasis on her answer, which was a total lie, imagine if he would have said, Hillary, everyone listening to us right now knows that you're lying. I know you're lying. You know you're lying. Donald Trump, who's standing behind the curtain, he knows you're lying. Everyone knows you're lying. Secret and top secret information of the U.S. government does not need to have a header on it to be treated as classified. So why are you lying even after all this time when everyone knows you're lying? Is this a psychological defect you have? I mean, some people just cannot tell the truth. They only lie. I mean, are you a pathological liar? Because Hillary, the whole country doesn't believe you. Everyone thinks you're a liar. And now here you are on NBC making up yet another lie about what is classified and not classified. So at any rate, for her to say this, that with such emphasis, that an email that has classified information on it has to have a header. She's lying through her teeth, and her supporters only support her all the more for it. So that is the doctrine of popularity for evolutionists, only now applied on a wider scale, which includes politicians. So we may have to come up with a new term for our DOPE, the Bob and Yurt Live dope observation, the doctrine of popularity for evolutionists. But I said that we would play the audio if we have it. Do we have that of Richard Dawkins? Okay, so this is about 2 minutes, and maybe we'll stop it once in the middle, but you'll get the point that Richard Dawkins, he's the world's most popular evolutionist, and he has, for his whole career, said the most absurd things with the straightest face. Now, we just happened to take something from just the past year or so, so this is recent. It has to do with the origin of the universe and how many atheists have been lying lately and saying to the gullible public that the universe came from nothing, when you read their books and they make it very clear that they don't believe the universe came from nothing. They're trying to come up with something that the universe came from. But since a lot of atheists went to public school, they don't read real well. And so they just get the headline that the universe came from nothing. And so Richard Dawkins said, well, of course the universe came from nothing. The physicists are just figuring that out now. But they're trying to figure out what this nothing was. And so at any rate, let's hear this audio in front of a live audience.
Physicists are still working on the origin of the cosmos. Among them is Lawrence Krauss, whom I shall be talking to next week. Now, it is very mysterious how the universe came into being. It's a deeply mysterious and interesting question.
And can I just interrupt? It's an old question, a very old question. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century was asking the same question. He said there must have been a time when no physical things existed, but something can't come from nothing. That was his view. It's just been repeated by us.
Something can come from nothing, and that's what physicists are now telling us. You asked me to give you a layman's interpretation. It would be a very, very layman's interpretation. When you have matter and antimatter and you put them together, they cancel each other out and give rise to nothing.
Stop the tape. All right, first of all, he's talking about a layman's explanation. That violates Physics 101. Physics 101 is the conservation of energy and matter. And when you have a positron, an electron, they come together, they annihilate each other, they produce energy. They don't produce nothing. When you have a proton and an antiproton, which they make, like at the Hadron Super Collider, right? They make antimatter. They make antimatter particles. It's very expensive, but they make them. And when they contact one another, they annihilate one another, the matter is annihilated, and they produce energy. Remember Einstein's E equals mc squared? Matter and energy are equivalent. So two pieces of matter, one that's called matter, the other's called antimatter, they come together and they produce energy. They don't produce nothing. So his layman's example is not a layman's example. It's a layman's confusion. And so then he's going to argue, since matter can go to nothing, therefore nothing can become matter. Isn't that something? How absurd it is that he fails Physics 101 in his illustration, but countless atheists will believe it. Countless evolutionists will believe it. They are the gullible ones who, because of their rebellion against God, they will believe a lie. They'll believe information. Like Lawrence Krauss, we had him on the show. If you missed it, you want to go to kgov.com/Krauss, K-R-A-U-S-S. Very interesting interview. Quite a write-up we have of it. In fact, it became the basis for our list of evidence against the Big Bang, which is now very popular. And our list of Big Bang predictions is perhaps even more popular now. Just a stunning article laying out the actual history that the Big Bang has failed to meet its predictions. It's not confirmed by its predictions. It is falsified by the predictions made by the Big Bang theory. At any rate, here's Richard Dawkins talking about this book from Lawrence Krauss, which is A Universe from Nothing, in which the book goes on to explain that, well, I'm not talking about nothing, physicist Larry Krauss says. I'm talking about a quantum field, and I'm talking about all this pre-existing condition. Richard Dawkins wrote the preface to the book. He never read the book. He didn't read the book, because in the preface he writes, and Lawrence Krauss, you know, friends are supposed to watch out for one another, cover for one another, take care of one another, be friends. Well, Lawrence Krauss used Richard Dawkins, because Dawkins sells millions of books. So he wrote the preface, and in the preface, he wrote, when Lawrence Krauss says a universe from nothing, he means exactly that, that the universe came from absolutely nothing. Krauss in the book, and I know because I read the book. My producer knows because he read the book in preparation for the interview with Krauss. In the book, Krauss says, now I'm not talking about nothing. I'm talking about quantum mechanics and a quantum field from which the universe sprang forward. So Dawkins did not read the book when he wrote the preface. He probably couldn't understand the book, even if he had read it. And so he wrote, Lawrence Krauss means exactly what he said, the universe came from nothing. And he was challenged during this event down in Australia. He was challenged by the bishop, whose voice you hear on in this little segment. And the bishop said, obviously, Richard never even read the book because he wrote the preface. He was totally wrong. So at any rate, let's return to this clip where Richard Dawkins violates the basics of physics 101, the conservation of energy and matter, and the buffoonery about matter and antimatter. And let's hear now where he goes from there.
And give rise to nothing. What Lawrence Krauss is now suggesting is that if you start with nothing, the process can go into reverse and produce matter and antimatter. The theory is still being worked out.
Well, there are many troubles with Richard's teachings, but a fundamental one is that he dumbs down God and he soups up nothing.
You can dispute exactly what's meant by nothing, but whatever it is, it's very, very simple. And why is that funny?
Well, I think it's a bit funny to be trying to define nothing.
And then the final screen shows our doctrine of popularity for evolutionists. That the most popular evolutionist is the one who says the most absurd things with the straightest face. So a couple years after Lawrence Krauss's book had come out, and Richard Dawkins wrote in the preface that Krauss means exactly that, nothing, just nothing. The universe would come from nothing. Krauss has been eviscerated by physicists in the secular media. I remember an article in the Atlantic Monthly. I remember an article in the New York Times where they just took him apart for misleading gullible readers. People buy his book, and he's not saying a universe from nothing. He says there's a pre-existing physical phenomenon. And so if that's true, then where did that come from? He never gets to that because they're famous at punting, right? That's what they do. They punt. And so here's Richard Dawkins realizing that, well, Krauss doesn't really mean nothing, Richard. I mean, you just thought that because you believed him. You believed your friend. You didn't think he'd be lying to everyone, but he was. And you believed it. Krauss doesn't come clean until the very end of his book when he says what insightful readers knew all along that he wasn't talking about nothing. If you haven't heard the interview with Krauss, you really owe it to yourself. kgov.com/Krauss, K-R-A-U-S-S, or Sour Krauss. No, just Krauss. kgov.com/Krauss. But so Krauss misleads Richard Dawkins, who believes him, and then Lawrence Krauss uses his friend to sell his book, makes his friend look like an idiot, and now Richard Dawkins is in the peculiar position of trying to explain that, of course, the universe came from nothing, but it wasn't nothing nothing, it was something nothing. And we know it was very simple. It had to be a simple nothing. It was very mysterious nothing, but it was a nothing something nothing. And the audience laughs. And this is an audience that's even pro-Richard Dawkins. But the most popular evolutionist is the one who says the most absurd thing with the straightest face. And that now, obviously, has been expanded by Hillary Clinton. She's teaching everyone just a wealth of knowledge is coming from this campaign. She taught John Kerry how to commit public corruption and transferred $9 million of federal tax dollars to his own daughter with a no-compete contract and extended beyond 5 years, which is another violation, not sent out for bids, and she's collecting $140,000 a year for 30 hours a week work. That's not bad if you can get it. Do we know anybody who can maybe make a grant to Bob and your life? I'm just asking their studio audience. Do we know anyone there? Well, anyone we know there doesn't like us, so it's not going to work. Another public policy issue in the news today, this is linked to from Drudge, is the U.S. states that are working to implement a Bob and Your Life crime policy recommendation from back in 2002. Back in 2002, we said on this show that we need to have a national DNA database. Longtime listeners will remember that. And then 4 years later, I had the opportunity, I was interviewing a presidential candidate. I repeated that recommendation to him. That was Tom Tancredo. That we need to form a national DNA database. And it turns out that this year, 2016, the country of Kuwait, they have budgeted the money, and they've begun implementing their own national DNA database, at least showing that the concept is viable. It's practical. It's not science fiction. Well, also today, September 13th, 2016, Matt Drudge links to a story about states that are collecting DNA from a large number of individuals. And they list Florida, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. So that's 4 out of 50. We're getting there. Colorado should do this. Every state should do this. Because what we want to do is, well, for one, rob sexual predators of their thought that they could get away with the crime. We want to rob them of that. But you see, liberals are willing to sacrifice women on the altar of being nice to criminals and to predators. That's generally an observation you could make of liberals. They're willing to sacrifice victims on the altar of being nice, overly nice, to criminals. And so I'm pretty thankful that we're finding out there's a real-world experiment with this in Kuwait, where they have budgeted $400 million for the requisite database and specimen collection, but also that there are police departments in this country, if you're a felon or suspected of a felony, they get your DNA, and they could keep your DNA in various circumstances. But apparently, according to this Drudge Report article, that there is an increasing phenomenon where anyone who's suspected of any crime, even a misdemeanor, they're having their DNA collected and it's being retained in databases. And I think that's tremendous. I just think that is thrilling. Now, I know that there are many conservatives who are paranoid, and they think there's a right to anonymity. Where does that right come from? God? Comes from the Ten Commandments? I mean, our rights come from God as revealed to us in the Ten Commandments. For example, God said, "Thou shalt not murder," and that shows that you have a right to life. And he said, "Thou shalt not steal," and that shows that you have a right to own private property. And he said, "Thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor," that's perjury, and that shows that you have a right to due process, to not have people lie to you in court, and that it be accepted. And so our rights come from God. If they come from the government, then they're not rights, are they? If they come from the majority, then they're not rights, are they? In fact, the government has to protect the minority from the majority. That's one of the primary functions of government, to protect the minority from the majority. And so majority rule, by the way, is inherently defeatist for the primary function of government, to give the majority control over the minority. Isn't that bizarre? Isn't that what Germany did? They had the majority have control over the minority. Isn't that what America did for what seemed like eternity if you were a slave? They gave the majority the rule over the minority. Democracy is absurd, and people, conservatives, who say, "Oh, we're not a democracy, we're a republic." You know, do they know you're not taking your medications? Do they know that? Do they let you out? Does your mother know that you're using the phone right now? I mean, what's going on? Conservatives think we're not a democracy. Don't they recognize that we're voting for the presidency? And we vote for senators. We vote for the House of Representatives. And that democratically elected officials are the ones who determine who's on the judiciary. And in countless states, they vote for the judges. And where you don't, quite often they vote whether to retain judges, like here in Colorado. So we're basically a democracy. But a democracy is not well suited for the primary function of government, which is to protect the rights of the one or the minority against the mob or the majority. So anyway, that was not a prediction that we made in 2002 and repeat it in 2006, but it was a crime policy recommendation, and we listed anyway on our list of predictions, right? kgov.com/predictions. We've made so many predictions that have been confirmed over the last 25 years, and we've got them going back to 1990, 1992, 94, 95, about galaxies, about death, about AIDS, about contraception, and about infanticide support and vestigial organs, and just on and on. One prediction about Richard Dawkins, and about junk DNA. Remember that, 1998 with Eugenie Scott. So this, in 2002, it wasn't a prediction. Oh, and by the way, many predictions since then, right up until the year 2015. And then we have these honorable mentions. You know, we have a couple of those, including the crime policy recommendation that America needs to create a national DNA database. So that's encouraging. The stuff going on with Donald Trump, that's not encouraging. He's a child killer, like his Hillary. But hey, tune in, kgov.com. God bless you.